Mitch, are you there with me?
Yes, I am.
All right, fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about how this call came to be and how I met this phenomenal player in the game of personal growth and development and self-improvement, Mitch Axelrod. I was attending a seminar in Chicago, and it was a publishing seminar, in fact, and the sponsor of that event had brought Mitch in and said, you know, hey, Mitch, can you talk about one of your skill sets or core competencies as it relates to publishing, which was developing and producing intellectual property and learning how to license your intellectual property and you know, your books and your information products and what have you. And so from that moment, I went up to Mitch and I said, man, what you do is absolutely phenomenal. You grew me. You expanded me. Thank you so much. And we kind of kept in contact with each other over the course of about a year or so. And then I remember, I think we were in New York, and we were doing the book expo. And I don't know if it was in New York or you were here. You were in Chicago. I had my television show, and I had you on my television show, and I had my crew come down, and we interviewed and talked with you, Mitch. And Mitch, you know, kept kind of talking about this whole concept of the new game, you know, the new game of business, new game of spirituality, new game of publishing. And I said, this is really interesting. So one day he ended up sending me an email and saying, Philippe, I really, really love what you're doing with the Shock Institute and the Shock philosophy, and I think we have some similarities and some matches here, and I'm working with this new technology. Well, it's not necessarily a new technology, but this technology called Axiology, no relation to my name, Axelrod. And I said, okay, Mitch, well, you know, send me something, let me know what you're doing, and let's take a look at it. Well, he sent it to me, ladies and gentlemen, and I immediately said, oh, my God, this is exactly what I have been looking for, not just for the Shock Institute, but for myself as well, for my own spiritual growth, because I remember so many gurus that I have interviewed over the years talking about the importance of human values. And so here was a science that was developed that measured human values so that you can get a blueprint of who you are. And I was nuts over it when I went through this process with Mitch, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight is what this process is. And so with that, I want to formally introduce my buddy and faculty member of the Shock Philosophy Institute of Advanced Manifestation. Mitch Axelrod is the founder of Axelrod and Associates, a business consulting firm, Axelrod Learning, a publisher of business and life skills training, workshops, and materials. Consulting and speaking since 1978, Mitch has presented more than 3,000 seminars, workshops, lectures, keynotes, and clinics to more than 1 million people from 30 countries on business, sales, marketing, life skills, and playing the new game. Mitch consults with Fortune 500 corporations, banks, insurance companies, small businesses, and individuals on how to boost income, increase it, and earn a more prosperous lifestyle. Mitch is the model, if you will, of the new game CEO, or what's known as the Chief Encouragement Officer, and his book, The New Game of Business, is being hailed as a breakthrough in the new game plan and playbook for business. Mitch is the master of the new game, and ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Chief Encouragement Officer, Mr. Mitch Axelrod. Mitch, thank you.
No, Philippe, that was just wow, I was wondering who that guy was you were introducing.
I'm sure I got the right guy on the line. I'm positive of that.
If you kick around long enough, you're bound to accumulate a resume.
Amen, brother.
Yep.
So, you know, let's start this out with, of course, how I introduced you, and that is the Chief Encouragement Officer. Where did that title come from, and what does that mean?
Over the past 10 years or so, actually it's almost 15 years ago that I began to teach, and actually out of observation. I'm kind of like a reporter in life. You know, I observe what's going on, I adapt to it, and because I've had to adapt so many times in my own career,
mm-hmm.
I began to recognize that we're playing a new game.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I first coined the phrase in 1991 as part of a training program I did, and have been essentially teaching those skills that I've been living for the past 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I frame CEO as Chief Encouragement Officer, because I believe that's the new game CEO. And for years I found myself in the position of being more of a chief encouragement officer than a chief executive officer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked the phrase. I felt like it was good. I kind of threw a trademark after it and started calling myself the chief encouragement officer of somebody who has had to constantly adapt. I became a single parent about 14 years ago or so, and made a couple of life changes where at the height of my speaking career, I got off the road to come home and be a full-time dad,
mm-hmm.
and raise my son, and that required me to play a new game. I shifted businesses. I've been in business since 1978, so I've had quite a few different businesses over the years, and each and every one of them required me to adapt skills that I had developed in the past to new applications and new situations. And so I kind of formally, about 5-6 years ago at the turn of the century, I formally said, you know, there's a new game out there. And no matter what aspect of life you look at, the power and the process of the new game is taking hold.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us are still operating under old game rules,
mm-hmm.
old game thinking, old game strategies, old game solutions. And as Albert Einstein said, you can't solve today's problems, or essentially the problems of the day, with the same level of thinking that created them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I committed myself, and really I'm passionate about it, is encouraging people to at least examine and explore new opportunities and see things in new light, create their own rules, and start to play this new game, whether it's business, money, life, spirituality, parenting, network marketing even. So in every aspect of the world, essentially, there's a new game. And so my role was to help stimulate conversation and encourage people to get on the field, step into the batter's box, and swing the bat.
Well, you know, I've talked to you on many occasions about the concept and process of the new game. And, in fact, what we're going to be talking about tonight and training tonight on is axiology and how to measure values. And that's definitely new game thinking. But you say that in the new game, you know, the term is, you know, outside of the box. Well, you're even beyond that. You go as far as saying there is no box.
Yeah, I believe that whether you're inside the box or you're outside the box, you're still tethered to the box. And if your thinking is boxed in or boxed out,
mm-hmm.
you're still to some degree connected to that box.
You're still influenced by it, aren't you?
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's good to step out of the box if you look at the box as your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look at the box as the comfort zone so much, although there is an analogy there. So it's good to step out of the box. No, there's no question about that. The thing is that most of us, when we do step out of the box, we put ourselves in a bigger box.
Mm-hmm.
So we step out of the smaller box into a bigger box. So I say, throw the box away. So one of the premises of the new game is new game thinking is no box thinking. And so whereas most people will say to you, you know, start your day with your to-do list and start your day with your goal sheets, and I say start your day with a blank slate, tabula rasa, as the old saying goes. And so when I get up in the morning, I start the day with a yellow pad when I'm not reading or doing something else. And I do my best to re-script my day from a yellow pad. Now,
mm-hmm.
sometimes I don't put anything on that yellow pad. Like, there's nothing that comes up, and that's okay. But over time, if you alter your approach to each and every day and you throw the box away,
mm-hmm.
and you start with a clean slate, essentially you don't drag the baggage of the past forward. And so if you're on your to-do list all the time, most of the time you're dragging your to-do list from one day to the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if you're setting goals, nothing wrong with setting goals. It's a healthy thing to do. But as we're going to explore tonight, goal setting to an extreme is actually an unhealthy state of being.
Yes, it is.
Now, if that doesn't fly in the face of just about everything you hear in the world of what I call success BS.
Talk to me about that. I love that success BS. Yeah.
Well, you know, I observed for 27, 28 years I've been self-employed, and for that long, I first read Think and Grow Rich back in the mid-1970s, and I thought, wow, this guy, here's a guy who essentially was a reporter, Napoleon Hill. He went out, and it wasn't as though he created this massive success for himself, but he reported on what was other people's success.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a landmark book, and it's probably been quoted as much or more than any other book in the personal growth and development field, as well it should, because mm-hmm. the premise of the book is phenomenal. Yet what I began to see over the years was that people were distorting the perception, and very often what happens is people accept what other people say as gospel.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 80s and really hit big time in the 90s was a process called modeling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And modeling was about, very simply, if you want to be successful at something, model what somebody else has done mm-hmm. and you'll be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the surface, that sounds like a very sensible thing to do. And again, I'm not judging. There's no good or bad or right or wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
However, what happens when you model other people is you begin to distance yourself from your own unique gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if your only end is success, and your end is success that matches up with somebody else's success, then modeling could be your path to the end result. It may or may not be fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
If your end result is success and you reach it, obviously that should be fulfilling. But what I discovered over the years was that a lot of what was being shared as gospel, as wisdom, was really just a person's own personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't always hold up in the crucible of real life for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people got into wanting their 15 minutes of fame, and over the past 5 years it's become almost like an obsession where everybody wants to be a guru,
mm-hmm.
I've seen some of these time-tested sage words of wisdom get twisted to the point where they are really nothing more than poop.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important, as I see it in the new game, is to not take your cues as much from the outside, but to go inside and to find and fulfill your own unique talents and abilities. And that's really kind of what I think attracted me back in 1991 to Axiology. I was kind of like, we bumped into each other,
mm-hmm.
and my life has never been the same since.
Well, let's talk about that bump in 1991 called Axiology. What is Axiology? What exactly is it? What does it do? And what are the benefits of this?
Axiology is a dictionary word. If you look up the word axiology in the dictionary, you'll see it comes from the combination of words axios, which essentially means value or valuable or worthy, and logi, of course, means logic.
Mm-hmm.
And the original connotation of axiology, or the actual definition, is value logic,
mm-hmm.
meaning that there is actually a logic to the process of valuing. And up until axiology became formalized, which was in the late 1960s, early 1970s, when it turned into a formal science that was proven by mathematics and calculus and models and just about all of the scientific criteria that were be applied to things like physics and mathematics were now applied to axiology.
Mm-hmm.
And what made axiology essentially formalized was the discovery that by using this mathematical formula, you could apply axiology universally. So it applied whether you were in the U.S., in Mexico, whether you were in the Far East, the Near East, the Mid East, Africa, it didn't matter where you were in the world, axiology has universal application.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, I bumped into it in a very funny way. I was speaking in Dayton, Ohio, and a friend of mine was in the audience with a friend of his, and they were on their way to Nashville, Tennessee, to meet with a gentleman who was kind of the link to Dr. Robert Hartman, who we'll talk about in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And they listened to my seminar, and afterwards we all went out to dinner, and I was in the middle of a pretty tough separation. I was having trouble in my marriage. I had come off a pretty bad business loss. And this guy says to me, listen, I have something I think can help you, and I'm very wide open. Anything that I believe will be of value to me, I give it a shot. I said, sure, I'll do it. And he said, here, fill out these two sheets of paper. And on these two sheets of paper were 18 items, things like a baby, a short circuit, a good meal, And I said, what is this? He said, just rank those from best to worst.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that only take me 10 minutes. He says, you're right. It's only a 15-minute test, quote, unquote. So I said, okay, I did it, handed it back to him, and forgot about it. 2 weeks later, in my mailbox, I get this 30-page report. So I sat down, I read this report, and I was every page I turned, I was like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. How does he know this? How did he figure this out?
Mm-hmm.
Where did this come from? And I was so stunned by the accuracy and the depth of it and it just how spot on it was. So I got on the phone, I called him, I said, what's up with this? I want more. I got to know everything there is to know about this. And so that was my introduction to axiology. And what's ironic is back then, this was done on a dot matrix printer. It was a very crude program. It had to be printed and mailed. Today we can do that whole process now in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was my introduction into axiology. And so I immediately went out and got one of the rarest books on the planet called Freedom to Live. It's the Robert Hartman story.
Mm.
And Dr. Hartman, who we'll talk about a little bit in a few minutes, is essentially the gentleman who pioneered axiology. He's considered to be the father of modern formal axiology. And he was the man who spent all his life trying to figure out, is there a way that you could actually measure value?
Mm-hmm.
And he cracked the code. And he spent his entire life was spent with one vision, and that was to give us the means to recognize and fulfill the good within each of us and enrich our lives. And he actually came up with a way to determine, how can we tap into that good? How can we actually measure our own value,
mm-hmm.
and do it objectively, logically, not just subjectively based on how we feel at any given moment?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the people,
or based upon opinion, other people's opinion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or based upon how we're going to make a distinction later, the difference between value and values,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And how our beliefs can change, but value doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
Value is universal. It's measurable. And when he cracked that code, which is back in the 1960s, Viktor Frankl,
mm-hmm.
who wrote that phenomenal book, Man's Search for Meaning,
mm-hmm.
and Albert Ellis, and Eric Fromm, and Abraham Maslow,
mm-hmm.
were hailing Dr. Robert Hartman as the guy who, like Galileo, cracked the code on something that would have profound impact on the human race. And as a matter of fact, his work was so esteemed that Dr. Hartman was nominated for a Nobel Prize in 1973.
Wow.
That's how much his work impacted the world at the time. And what was very unfortunate, very sad, really devastating for the community was that he passed away the same year.
Mm.
So the year he was nominated for a Nobel Prize, he passed away.
Wow.
And all of his work kind of sat in limbo until about maybe 15 years later when computers went from, you know, big Jugunda computers that nobody could own,
mm-hmm.
and PCs and personal computers started to pop up in the late 80s and early mid to late 80s. One of his doctoral students, Wayne Carpenter, who has been a lifelong student and master of axiology, took all of Dr. Hartman's work, sat painstakingly, and created a computer program so that we could then now get results from Dr. Hartman's profile literally in minutes,
mm-hmm.
in what it would take Dr. Hartman to 3 hours to hand score one of these value profiles.
Wow. Now, you know, for years in personal growth and development, spiritual growth and development, I have heard this term called values, that if you want to make significant change in your world, in your life, permanently, you must change your values more so than just change your beliefs or your thoughts or your mind. But I found that a lot of people really don't know what their values are. If you ask a person, well, what are your values? What are your top five values? They really, you know, they think values are goals, and they're not. So could you give us a definition of what exactly are values?
The definition that we use in axiology is that essentially value is meaning. So when we talk about value, we talk about meaning. And what we give meaning to is what we value.
Mm-hmm.
So in formal axiology, meaning is the measure of value.
Mm-hmm.
So when you sit down and you complete these two pages of the Hartman Value Profile,
mm-hmm.
and you rank order these 18 items on each page,
mm-hmm.
you're giving meaning to each of these items in hierarchical order.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that you give the most meaning to is the thing that you value the most.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that you give the least meaning to is the thing that you value the least. And so, essentially, what Hartman was able to do was give us a way to actually measure that meaning using the value profile. And essentially, he said that there's a scale or hierarchy of richness in the world. And Hartman, it was an interesting journey for him because he spent a lot of his time trying to figure out what was good.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really the essence of where axiology started.
That was the motivation. That was the motivation.
Yeah, is to determine what is good, because Hartman came out of Germany in the 1930s,
mm-hmm.
when Hitler came to power,
mm-hmm.
and what his whole driving motivation was that if it was possible for somebody to organize evil in such a way, would it be possible for somebody to take the same organizing principles and organize good?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Dr. Hartman spent his entire life trying to figure out, mm-hmm. is if that were possible, where a country could fall prey to an evil organization, if you will,
mm-hmm.
how could you take that same organizing strategy and organize it for good?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And his question was, is there any reason for the efficiency to be monopolized by the forces of evil, and why is it so hard to organize good? We have good people in history, and most of us are quote, good,
mm-hmm.
but yet it's very difficult to see that good being organized, and we're seeing it in our world today,
mm-hmm.
how much challenge we're facing. And so he devoted his whole life to doing something about it. And so his whole philosophy, which then became a science, suggested that if you could measure good, you could understand meaning, and then you could fulfill your own highest and best individual potential because you could understand the meaning of your own life and your own self.
Well, I completely get it, because I went through the value profile that you took me through, and what was that called, peak performance profile?
Mm-hmm. It was the performance profile.
Profile. And, you know, here's the thing that I realized, that, you know, no matter what my intentions were, no matter what my goals were, that whatever it was that I wanted to manifest, however I set that intention and go about manifesting that intention, it first has to go through my values. And it was fascinating to have, you know, this kind of blueprint of who I am right now, and then areas that I could instantly tweak and see. It read me like a book. So my question is in calculating our values, how instant, if you will, is the revelation of having a blueprint of who you are and knowing that you can change it at will?
Well, as far as instant, in terms of, if you're using the word instant as time, if that's what you mean by how instant is the revelation,
mm-hmm.
The results that we get are instantaneous, because once you complete the actual two-page profile, the computer-based system, depending upon which report, and we can run more than 50 different views of your value structure, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Mm-hmm.
So we have profiles for all kinds of things, performance and for general relationships and employability and sales and customer service and management and all kinds of stuff that we can run different views of.
Mm-hmm.
So the results are instantaneous. And once you read through this, the awareness factor kicks in, and really you can have instant change, because when you go from being essentially unconscious to conscious, and you're aware of what your talents are, what you value, where your blind spots are, where your strengths are, where your untapped abilities are, all of a sudden things start to shift. And once you shine that light on that, you can never go back to the way it was before. So it can happen instantly. We've had people literally go through a profile, and in an hour conversation, their whole life has changed. Now, that's not to say that, you know, this is like you go to a religious experience and you get healed from some kind of major disease. We're not talking about that kind of change. We're talking about a fundamental, profound shift in understanding yourself. And if there is one thing that Hartman has bestowed upon us, and his premise of all this was that we tend to understand things in the world around us so much better than we understand ourselves. And our culture has set it up so that it's almost it almost is counter to our cultural learning and conditioning to take the time to really go inside and understand ourselves. And if you look at so much of the self-help, again, back to what I call the success BS, so much of the self-help is built about around, if you want to be successful, you got to buy my widget. If you want to be transformed, you got to come to my seminar. If you want to earn more money, you've got to buy my training course. All right? Now, again, I've been a student all my life and have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on all of those things, and learning is a wonderful thing. Yet what all of that could be boiled down to is really worthless if you don't go inside and look at why are you buying these things to begin with. I wrote an article years ago called Why 90% of Self-Help Doesn't Help. And one of the reasons, the main reasons that it is because 90% of the people that buy things in that self-help development, and I'm one of them, most of the time you never even open it, and 90% of the time you don't apply it.
Right.
And I've still got more CDs here than I'll ever read or listen to or books to read. We take issue, which is the most important part of this whole conversation, is something called clarity. And clarity of thinking. And when we have clarity of thinking, we make good choices for ourselves. When we have restricted clarity of thinking, we don't make good choices for ourselves. And the problem with clarity is most of the time we don't know what we don't know, or we can't see what we can't see. And so if we're having a problem with being clear in an area where we have to make an important life choice or career choice, but we don't know that we lack clarity, it's kind of like we're stumbling in the dark, or trying to drive down the street in a very heavy fog. We tend to bump into a lot of things because we don't have that clarity. Once we see with clearer vision, all of a sudden choices become easier, decisions become easier, and life tends to work better.
Now, make the distinction, if you will, Mitch, between value and values.
Okay, well, that kind of takes us a little bit into the actual science of axiology.
Okay.
And so let me make a couple of preliminary comments about it.
So sure.
So we don't get lost in kind of the, you know, just the techno jargon of it a little bit. What, first of all, in terms of value, again, we said, is meaning. All right? So values, which are commonly thought of as beliefs or principles, are actually one of the three subsets of value. And if you look at what Hartman discovered in terms of the dimensions of value, what he realized and then proved mathematically, and now we can measure with amazing precision in a very short period of time, is that there's actually three dimensions of value.
Okay.
And he said that these dimensions of value, which he discovered, were relative in hierarchy and not equal. And so you've got three dimensions of value in a hierarchical valuation.
Mm-hmm.
And at the low end, he said, was something called systemic value.
Mm-hmm.
And systemic value, essentially, is the value of something in terms of its abstract theory or concept.
Give us an example.
Well, an example of systemic value would be the law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The law is not moral. The law is either legal or illegal. And so when you look at systemic value, we commonly call this the thinking dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the dimension where everything exists in our head. So when you consider the systemic values, things like rules, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason rules are systemic is because rules, you either follow the rules or you break the rules. What makes systemic value unique is that it's essentially an either-or dimension. And so in our heads, everything exists in our heads perfectly, or it doesn't exist at all.
Mm-hmm.
This is the dimension that we commonly call values.
Mm-hmm.
It's the dimension of beliefs. Why? Because beliefs are thoughts. Purpose. Your purpose is a systemic value. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because your purpose is a concept. It's an idea.
Mm.
So anything that essentially exists in the thinking dimension, Hartman called a systemic value, which, by the way, includes systems.
Mm-hmm.
It includes things like authority. So if you're highly systemic, you tend to like to do things right. You tend to do things by the book. You tend to have very, very high expectations of yourself and who you think, how well you think you ought to perform
mm-hmm.
or be.
Mm-hmm.
You tend to obey the rules and follow the policies. This is about what you think. And that's what Hartman said, because it was only two-dimensional, because
mm-hmm.
it's either or. Something is either good or bad. It's black or white. It's legal or illegal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's scientific or it's not. All these things are systemic values. And so Hartman said that there's a higher dimension of value,
mm-hmm.
and that's the real world, because the real world is more valuable than the ideal world.
Mm-hmm.
Now this really bumps up against a lot of our thinking and a lot of our training and a lot of our conditioning. Hartman made a comment in his autobiography, which I thought was kind of funny. He said that Aristotle was completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just came right out and said that Aristotle was completely wrong. He said it was his physics were wrong and his ethics were wrong. And the reason he used the term wrong was because much of Aristotle's work was based on the intellect. And what Hartman discovered when he did his values work is that the intellect, the mind, is the systemic realm of value.
Mm-hmm.
And in the mind, everything exists perfectly, and if it isn't perfect, it's imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, if you set a goal, and you set a goal really, really high, way beyond your capacity in the real world to accomplish it,
mm-hmm.
and you get close to the goal, but you don't quite get there, in the world of systemic value, either or, you either succeed or you
fail.
What? You fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that world of abstract thinking, there's no 99% success. It's
there's
either
no gray
I
area.
Got the goal or I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of the frustration that we see going on in the world and in individuals today comes from one of the core measures that we call goal frustration.
Mm-hmm.
It's the distance between the goal that you set and the level of that goal that you achieve. Now, in a higher valuation, you would applaud yourself for getting however close to the goal you got.
Mm-hmm.
You would applaud your effort. You would applaud the willingness to do whatever it took to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You would applaud and celebrate however far you got, and most importantly, you'd enjoy the journey.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you are ruled by a systemic way of thinking, you not only won't enjoy the journey, but if you don't get to the destination, it's failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because in
mm-hmm.
a world of two dimensions, there's only success and failure.
Mm-hmm. This is really good.
Well, this is going on for about 70% of us.
Well, you know, it's fascinating you say this, because this is one of the things that showed up on my value profile.
Yes.
And, you know, I know, you know, we keep all of these, you know, profiles confidential when people go through them, but, you know, I don't have a problem sharing mine.
Yep.
Because I have no secrets to hide. But what I found out is that I never really enjoyed the success that I had, because I was constantly measuring my success against the next success.
Yep.
So I never got a chance to stand still and, as they say, you know, smell the roses or smell the coffee or whatever, and appreciate, you know, the accomplishments that I have had and have made in the world or in my own personal life and personal journey. So I think this is extremely important for people to hear and for people to get, because I think a lot of people are in this particular area of their values as it relates to systemic value systems.
And this is one of the major sources of stress.
Mm-hmm.
We actually can measure mental stress, if you could believe that.
Wow.
We can measure seven different levels and seven different kinds of mental stress.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the seven mental stressors is goal frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past 3 years, I have never seen so much stress show up in so many profiles. And in almost, I'd say, 70% or more, this one area of goal frustration shows up in a big way.
Wow.
And what it points to essentially a glitch in our thinking that we're not good enough unless we are perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's reinforced by all kinds of outside influences. From parents to culture to education to religion to you name it, this idea that we're not good enough unless we become more.
Mm-hmm.
And as we go through the next two levels of the value, you'll see why this is such a twisted perspective, because in the process of thinking that we have to become more, we go further and further away from who we already are, which is the perfect us.
Mm-hmm.
Intrinsically, mm-hmm. as human beings.
We're just running to stand still, if you will.
In a way,
yeah. So what's that next level then, after systemic?
Well, the next level up was, if systemic is the concept or thinking world,
uh-huh.
then Hartman said there's a higher level of value, which is the real world, and he called that extrinsic value.
Uh-huh.
And essentially, extrinsic value is really the social world of relationships. It's the concrete world. It's the world of our senses as opposed to the world of our thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the world of, instead of our mind, it's the world of material things.
Mm-hmm.
So in the extrinsic world, you have anything that's concrete, anything that's measurable, anything that's functional, things, anything that you can touch, taste, feel, smell, anything you use your senses. It's the world of doing and getting things done. So this essentially is the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And Hartman said that, you know, what makes this more valuable is, first of all, mathematically he proved it, that there's more properties in the extrinsic world. And that's how you really measure value, is how many properties does something have.
Mm-hmm.
So if something only has two properties, which is either or, it's systemic, it's not as valuable as something that has a multitude of properties,
mm-hmm.
and that's the extrinsic world.
Mm-hmm.
So in the extrinsic world, you have all kinds of things. You have functional things. You have relationships in terms of social. You have occupational groups, and you have concrete things like money, material things, all right? This is all the extrinsic world. And when you look at the distinction between systemic, which is the thinking dimension, let's say, and the extrinsic, which is the doing dimension or the real dimension, here's the here's a simple example. If you have a car, the concept of a car, that's a systemic value. You have the blueprints, you have the plan, you have the prototype. It's all on paper, right? That's systemic because it's really just an abstract idea. When you convert that prototype on paper into an actual car, that's the real world. That actual car is more valuable than the blueprints of the car.
Sure, that makes sense.
Just like a house is more valuable than the blueprints of a house.
Got it. That's a very good, clear distinction.
So it's very simple to see why people tend to value getting things done more than just ideas. You know, they say ideas are a dime a dozen.
Right.
That's not to diminish the idea of ideas, because I think there's far too little critical thinking going on in the world right now. However, you could take all the idea people in the world, put them all in a room, get them all to think up things, but nothing will really create value, real value, until you do something to put something in motion. So I've used a phrase for many years that helps people to get going and actually helps them to manage their fear, because sometimes you don't really get rid of your fear. Fear is such a primal thing, but it helps you to manage your fear, and that is imperfect action beats perfect inaction every time. And if you think about an area of your life right now where you're stuck in perfect inaction, otherwise known as inertia, if you will.
Right.
And what you will probably find is either you don't have a level of attention on that, you don't have clarity around it, all right, or you're so concerned about taking the perfect right action that you will not allow yourself to take an imperfect action and get going until you feel you've got the exact right action or answer.
Fantastic. You can't get past go.
You can't move. You're stuck.
Yeah. Wow.
And so how we help people get unstuck in a lot of ways is to help them see how focused they are on this dimension of perfection, which is the systemic dimension. And if we can get them just to nudge up one level to the extrinsic, to the doing, and say, guess what? It's a good thing to do something imperfectly. It's like if you're waiting for a train and it's the last train of the night. I actually even have a story about this, about my son was getting born, and I was in San Diego, and I was trying to catch the last plane out of San Diego. And I could have, and I actually turned out I didn't catch the plane. But on my way to get there, I was dragging my bags, one on each arm, running through the airport, screaming like a maniac. And I must have looked like a maniac because they didn't let me on the plane. Okay? All right? But that was a case where I could have been very proper and looked perfect and done it the right way, and there was no chance because the plane would have taken off. I use the same analogy of a train because every day we're in a position where the train is coming into our station, and some of us are so stuck on the platform waiting to get on the train perfectly that by the time we get ready to step on the train, it's gone.
Very well said.
Sometimes it's better to get on the train imperfectly, uncomfortably, even looking foolish, and then adjust as you go. And for some people, that is life-changing experience.
Absolutely. And you know what's interesting is that I don't know any other technology that would put this kind of clarity and information in my face, because if you're working systemically, you never get a chance to recognize the extrinsic part.
That's right.
You never get there. You're a hamster in the cage in the little wheel.
Yep.
Wow.
And quality of life is about really living more fully in all three dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
It's three-dimensional living, not two-dimensional living.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gotten so comfortable with two-dimensional living that it's starting to affect our health, it's starting to affect our culture, it's starting to affect everything from foreign policy to politics to education. I mean, there isn't an area of our world right now in which these value distinctions can't help create a better place to live.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And especially when you move up to the highest dimension of value, which is the intrinsic dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And Hartman, his whole life, essentially in a nutshell, was to help people with this model to live a more full intrinsic life. And the distinction that he made about intrinsic value was that intrinsic value is not something like extrinsic value, which is concrete. Intrinsic value is moral value.
Mm-hmm.
It's where your spiritual self is.
Mm-hmm.
And the mathematical distinction here, just so that those of you who are kind of science-based want to hear the mathematical distinction, is that if systemic value is two-dimensional, either or,
mm-hmm.
extrinsic value is multidimensional, you've got all these different kinds of possibilities in the real world,
mm-hmm.
intrinsic value is infinitely dimensional,
mm-hmm.
means it's beyond measure.
Mm-hmm.
When something has intrinsic value, it is essentially valued for itself. It's not compared. Extrinsic stuff is all comparable.
It's just.
You can compare the size of your car with my car,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
your net worth with my net worth,
mm-hmm.
you know, how successful you are to how successful I am.
Mm-hmm.
The extrinsic world, the social world, all the real world stuff is all comparable. You can compare it. You can contrast it.
Mm-hmm.
But in the intrinsic world, it's beyond measure.
Mm-hmm.
And so the essence of the intrinsic world is essentially an infinite value. An infinite value, meaning intrinsically, you value something just for what it is because it's unique and one of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
And now, obviously, the thing I use thing in quotes, that is most unique and most one of a kind is you as an individual human being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That intrinsically we are each valuable, equal in value intrinsically,
mm-hmm.
because we are each unique human beings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in the spiritual world, in the intrinsic world of value, nobody holds a higher level of value because we're all valuable beyond measure.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when we get into the extrinsic world or dimension of value where we start to classify things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have very rich people and they're different from very poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you value people extrinsically, which a lot of people do,
mm-hmm.
they value people based on their class,
mm-hmm.
or based on their net worth,
mm-hmm.
or based on where they live in their housing development, or based on how prestigious they are or how popular they are. If you value people systemically, you value people based on how you think they measure up to your definition of right and perfect. And maybe they believe like you believe. So people who value each other systemically tend to congregate together around a common level of belief systems,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or a common protocol or a common set of policies or politics or whatever. But when you get to the intrinsic level of value, we value each other for our humanity.
Mm.
And at that level of value, we're valuing each other based on compassion. And this is the essence of moral value. And so Hartman makes this phenomenal distinction, very simple. He gives us a three-dimensional model of the world in which everything that happens, everything that exists, can exist in these three dimensions. Intrinsic is moral value. Extrinsic is material value. Systemic is mind value.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have this simple but very deep and interconnected model where you can look at all of these different things in your world and in yourself and begin to see how you bring yourself to each of these three dimensions.
Well,
so that's really the essence of what the value axiology is all about.
Well, I think it's absolutely incredible because I have been, you know, if you will, a spiritual seeker for decades, literally. And, you know, seeking truth is a lifelong journey, or seeking your truth and whatever and however that manifests itself and shows up in your life. But to have values explained, languaged, if you will, to understand these three components, I don't see how I have managed to get as far as I have without this information, without this particular technology. And the moment that I took the value profile, I remember you called me up and went through the training with me and kind of gave me the a rundown of what this profile was saying about me. And after which I had to, you said, hey, Philippe, you know, call me anytime, shoot me out an email if you want to talk about or discuss anything. And I think a week or more went by before I even called you back or said anything to you. And I think I got a couple of emails from you saying, Philippe, are you okay? Are you all right? Because I was really altered. I mean, I was from the cellular level, from my neural nets to, you know, every synapse in my brain, I was reprogrammed. And I you know, they say in a quantum leap or a quantum event, you go through what's called an identity crisis. Because what happens when you go through an identity crisis, it means your values have shifted. And you cannot shift your values without having that identity crisis, where you are recalibrating who you are and moving to another level in consciousness. And so it was not that I was, you know, not communicative to you or trying to do that deliberately. I had to reboot who I was, and I'm doing more, being more, and integrating all of these three levels of values more in my life. And everyone, including yourself, has said, Philippe, I see a difference.
Yeah, the difference is amazing because it's like once you understand this, you can't go back.
You really cannot.
You can't fool yourself into, and there'd be no reason to, because understanding these distinctions gives you a fuller, richer grasp of the totality of life. And this is not just a spiritual journey. This has immense practical payoff for people.
Without question, yeah.
And the idea being that although there is a hierarchy of value, most of us, I would say almost all of us, don't even come close to living as fully in each of the dimensions as we could.
Isn't that the truth? Yes.
And so when you consider, though, the overarching importance of intrinsic value, This is one of the things Hartman said. I'm going to actually quote him here. He said, compared to the value of the human personality, which essentially is the intrinsic value, the value of the entire extrinsic world is infinitely small, and the value of a thought system is infinitely small.
Mm-hmm.
So what Hartman is saying here is that it's very easy to overvalue our thought systems and our ideas and our ideals and our principles and think that those are actually more important and valuable than the intrinsic value of a human being.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yet he proves, and most of us know this intrinsically, that most of the great evil in history has been committed in the name of this kind of an overvaluation. Either we put too much value on extrinsic things, oil, money, property, whatever, or we put too much value on systemic ideas, you know, my God is better than your God, my religion is better than your religion. And it's one thing to say, okay, your religion is better than my religion, I'll let you live with that idea. It's another thing if you say, my religion is better than your religion, or my belief system is better than your belief system, and if you don't believe the way I believe, I'm going to kill you. And what Hartman called, that's what Hartman discovered, And it all came from his experience in Germany, and he actually coined a phrase. He called it systemic abuse. He said that systemic abuse is when any system, which is inclusive of the state, the government, an organization, when any system diminishes the value of an individual in favor of the furtherance of that system, you have an inversion of value, or really a perversion of value.
Wow.
And it could lead to systemic abuse.
Wow.
There was an amazing, amazing scene that sums up axiology in the movie Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part in the movie in Schindler's List where the Jews are coming up to the table where they're having their papers presented, and behind the table, the Nazi commander looks at the paper and makes one statement. He says, essential or non-essential? Which means if you were able to perform a function that was essential to what they needed, you went onto the line and you got to live.
Mm-hmm.
If you could not perform a function or you did not have a skill that was essential to the running of the camp, you went onto the other line and walked into the gas chambers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And essentially that scene depicted axiology and the perversion of values in a nutshell, where the value of the human being was completely obliterated, the intrinsic value of a human being. And this goes on every single day. It goes on even in subtle ways.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It goes on in parenting. I mean, I've had to catch myself where I would talk to my son and elevate a systemic value above his intrinsic worth.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a conversation my former wife and I were having about a report card and his study habits, and we were starting to get a little heated. And he put his hands over his ears, he put his head on the table, and he wouldn't listen to what we said. And fortunately, we caught ourselves, and what we realized was that we were equating his performance with who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And the message he was getting was, who he was not good enough because his performance was not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we immediately stopped. We realized what we were doing. Fortunately, because we had some training in axiology, we looked at each other. We said, you know, wow. And we apologized. And we go out of our way now to make our son recognize that no matter what, intrinsically, we love him. Now, sure, we'd love to see him perform well. We'd love to see him do well. We'd love to see him succeed as any parent would. However, we know that intrinsically he has more value, and that's how we treat him. And what's amazing is that now he's treating other people that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we see that there's transferability once people get these distinctions and they see the difference in these three dimensions. There's a tremendous amount of transferability, and that's why people can see really great change, positive change, in a very short period of time.
Job well done on that, on parenting. That's a major task and undertaking. Unfortunately, there's no book written on parenting and raising, you know, a human being, if you will, and developing that human being for the real world. Now, what I want to get into now is the nuts and bolts of this. And not that we haven't gone through nuts and bolts. I mean, we've gone into some really deep, heavy understandings of what axiology is. But now what I want to talk about is what's called the value profile. We talked about it earlier about, you know, there's like 50 different value profiles. But, you know, what is the value profile? And, you know, what do you recommend, if you will, that individuals being introduced to the science of values or the science of measuring values for the first time? What kind of value profile do you recommend that one takes if they've never been exposed to anything like this before?
Okay, well, that's actually a two-pronged answer. The first part is that there's only one profile that we use as an input form.
Okay.
And you can actually take a look at that if you happen to be near a computer. If not, when the next time you're near a computer, go to this URL, thenewgame.com. thenewgame.com, thenewgame.com/HVP, and that stands for Hartman Value Profile, mm-hmm. HVP.PDF.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the Hartman Value Profile, thenewgame.com/HV, as in Victor, or value, P as in profile, .PDF. And so the Hartman Value Profile, which is actually owned by the Hartman Institute,
mm-hmm.
all right, and that profile, those two pages where you see a list of 18 items on each page, that's the input form that everybody completes.
Okay.
That is the universal input form that Dr. Hartman proved. It's amazing that something as simple as these two pages, when completed and rank ordered, can give us an absolute accurate picture, just like an X-ray, or just like a yardstick measuring a yard,
mm-hmm.
or a scale measuring a pound,
mm-hmm.
or a thermometer measuring your body temperature. We can get an accurate picture of where you are today,
mm-hmm.
in how you make meaning out of your world and out of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the great thing about this is your values, which are beliefs, we tend to cling on to and hold on to, even though they change from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But your value in all three dimensions can change. It's not static. So if you have something change in your life and you shift your attention or you gain more clarity,
mm-hmm.
or something happens where you stop paying attention to people and you start paying attention to things, it will reflect in the profile. So we have people who take profiles every 3 months, every 6 months. I do it every year at least. We had one guy took it 3 weeks after he did the first profile. He did the second profile, and he had already increased his clarity dramatically.
Wow.
With one coaching session. So it's not a static measure. It's very much like taking an ongoing measure of where your head's at, so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So
mm-hmm.
the HVP, the Hartman Value Profile, just so that you know that how unique this is, there's 6.4 quadrillion different ways to rank order 18 items.
Wow.
That's the equivalent of having an 18-number license plate, if you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually, there's so many different possibilities that no two people rank order the profiles the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, even though it's a simple tool,
mm-hmm.
it's got amazing depth to it.
I like that because it's not a McDonald's approach, if you will. No pun intended about, you know, I'm just using the term, you know, no franchising here. This
right.
really is an individual process, and you get a chance to see who you are on paper and in a graphed format.
Yeah, and what's interesting is it's very much a unique and individual thing. So unlike a lot of what would be commonly known as assessments, which we don't call this an assessment because
no,
it really
not
is not,
no.
even though we use that term with some of our profiles,
mm-hmm.
What you're measuring here is uniquely you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not you compared to the bell-shaped curve. It's not you compared to somebody else. We don't use labels. So you're not an ENFP or whatever it may be where you think you're stuck with something.
You're not right or wrong.
You're not right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's no value judgments, and you'll never see the word weakness show up in the profile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because our premise is not that you have strengths and weaknesses, because that's a systemic valuation,
mm-hmm.
which you say, well, if I have strengths, then I must have weaknesses, and our cultural conditioning, which I think is backwards, suggests that if you have strengths and you have weaknesses, most of us, when we see a weakness, we're drawn towards strengthening it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We feel as though in order to be perfect, we've got to strengthen our weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I did my profile the very first time, I had one of those ahas that said, you know, if I keep trying to strengthen my weaknesses, I will eventually weaken my strengths.
Mm.
Because
isn't that something?
Yeah, and it's inevitable.
Wow.
It's inevitable. So we say strengthen your strengths. Come from your unique talents and abilities. Another reason why modeling can actually be detrimental, Because if you spend too much time trying to model somebody else's behavior or approaches, and that's not to say that you shouldn't use other approaches, that's
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
Sure.
Use them, though, from an inside-out perspective where they're serving you as opposed to you having to alter who you are
mm-hmm.
to be a model of somebody else.
And lose yourself in the process, because that's really what you're doing, is you're losing your own identity.
It's such a good aha, if you will, because we don't even consciously know that we're doing it half the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But because we're so culturally conditioned to seek our answers outside of ourselves, we've come to the point where we have lost trust in our own intuition.
Wow.
We've lost trust in our own intrinsic knowing.
There it is.
And I know a lot of your work has been around quantum physics
mm-hmm.
and breaking loose of past notions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so axiology is another tool in that toolbox. It's not the be-all and end-all, and it's certainly not something that you should throw everything else out and just keep this.
Right.
You add this to
That's
whatever
right.
else you're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so the Hartman Value Profile, the HVP, is the universal input form. Now, the output forms, what comes out of that is, and this is what makes our profiles unique, is that we right now can generate more than 50 different types of profile reports.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that you were referring to, the one that you did, is called the Personal Performance Assessment. And actually, I put it up on the internet, so if people want to look at it, they can see it. And it's also at thenewgame.com/personal-perform-PDF. It should show up. I uploaded it a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular profile, which is it's really a high-performance profile. It was originally designed for athletes, but we also use it for people who want to measure performance because it's the only profile that I've ever seen that can actually measure the four categories that show up on page 2, which is focus, fire, faith, and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Focus being the ability to identify and take care of critical issues, tasks, and goals.
Mm-hmm.
Fire being the drive and energy to complete those tasks and goals.
Mm-hmm.
Faith being the belief that the best can and will happen, along with the ability to stay on track. And then fear, which is pretty obvious, is this. We define it as the sensitivity to exposure and criticism for not measuring up to expectations of yourself and others,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or for not completing tasks and goals.
This is the process of eliminating fear of no fear. Yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
And so this profile, about 2 years ago, I was loaded with fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get my arms around it. It was a big change in my life. I was experiencing a lot of passing. A lot of family members and close friends were passing, and I was just loaded. I was turning 50, and you know that'll shake you up a little
mm-hmm.
bit. And so I had this gnawing feeling inside of me, and I couldn't get my hands on what it was. And you know, fear is such a big thing. It could be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes,
it's the 800-pound gorilla,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know? And so I did my profile. I specifically did this profile. And what I came up with, which was really amazing, when I got to the fear category, if you look at page 9 on this profile, in particular, you see the 5 categories of fear that we actually measure.
Mm-hmm.
And once you begin to isolate and identify where your fear lies, you can start to work on it. You
Absolutely.
Can start to manage it.
And isn't it interesting, because sometimes your fears are so deeply embedded in your psyche, you have no idea where it is.
Yes.
It cloaks itself.
And that's part of the challenge with fear. You know, the old book that was written, I think was it Marcia Senator? Somebody wrote a book on Feel the Fear and Do, is that I could intellectualize that all day long, but I still felt the fear, and something was holding me back. And so helping me in the process was being able to get to identify and isolate where that fear was. And for me, it happened to be in the fear of disappointing others and the fear about performing to my best.
The fear of other people's opinion. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
And of course, intellectually I knew it, but there's something that happens when you see it on the page, and the page has your name on it,
yes,
and it explains it in a very positive, gentle way that gives you suggestions as to what you can do about it, and then you get to a point where you see, in this particular profile, on page 11, where it shows you your key sources of flow, and those key sources of flow help you to identify where you're really good and strong. And so I began to focus on those. And then on the last page where it indicated the sources of interference, which are those things that are in the way that are currently interfering with your personal performance,
wow,
I was able to say, oh, okay, now I can identify it. I can get some outside help to work through it. And just the awareness that it wasn't some 800-pound gorilla, it was only maybe a 100-pound monkey. You know?
Right, right.
It wasn't I was afraid of everything. There were a couple of things that really had a grip on me. And within a period of 3 to 6 months, I was able to kind of just release and let go of some of that. And so the profile became a great tool. It's a phenomenal tool, not only for your own individual self-awareness, but the practical application of it is huge, because we all operate not just in the intrinsic world where we want to feel better about our, you know, ourselves, but we also operate in the extrinsic world. And for most of us, we're not performing anywhere near what our capacity is in the extrinsic world. And we don't know why. And so we take seminars, we take courses, we read, maybe we do some other kinds of work. Maybe some of us have been like, I've been to therapy. You do all this stuff to try to figure it out. And yet the key is in your thinking. And if you believe that your thinking has such a huge impact on the direction of your life, then imagine the power that comes from understanding how you think and how you value.
Well, that's one of the things that you say in this, is that you can identify your natural thinking patterns. And for the people listening on this, and for the people subsequently that will be listening to this later on, you know, how powerful is that you have a process where you can measure and calculate and identify your thinking patterns? Because, you know, as you said earlier, you know, I always use the term, people are either consciously conscious or they're consciously unconscious. And most people are consciously unconscious. You go up to the average person and say, excuse me, they say, huh? You know, they're not there. They're not present. And so that's where the problem lies, is because if you're not thinking about your thinking and you don't know what your patterns of thinking are, you will never get to the goal. You'll never manifest the intention because you don't have a cause and effect evaluation of it.
That's a great, great point. And I'll tell you what else, too, is that when you become aware of your biases in your own thinking, you are aware of the obstacles that are in the way to fulfilling your good.
Wow.
And when Hartman talked about good, he said, well, you know, if I'm going to talk about good, I have to talk about what is good. And essentially, Hartman said, the definition of good is something that fulfills its own meaning. So, you know, when you look at good, it's not a description of something. You can have a good assassin. That doesn't mean that person is a morally good person. As an assassin, that person could be a very good assassin. He fulfills his meaning, which is to assassinate.
That's right.
All right. So the moral question.
So good and bad is not, in this instance, dealing with a moral judgment. It's dealing with the skill set.
Yes.
Or core competency.
Exactly. It's how much does it fulfill its purpose?
Yes.
So if you have a if you ask for my finest china, if you want a cup of coffee, so if you go visit somebody and they say, "Will you serve me your good china?" and you come out with your finest china in a formal setting, that would be good. On the other hand, if I'm on a ski lift and I want to drink a cup of coffee going up on my ski lift, chances are a good cup of coffee isn't going to be served in fine china.
Chances are not. That's slim.
Cup, right?
That's right.
So good can be relative.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a huge breakthrough.
Sure.
So with the distinctions of these different dimensions and all these different kinds of reports, and knowing how you think, you can remove so many of the obstacles that get in the way of you fulfilling your own personal good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, when we see the light bulb go on for people, mm-hmm. whether it's face-to-face, and most of the time it's on the phone because we do most of our coaching and our work by phone,
mm-hmm.
it's an absolute amazing thing. It kind of just raises the hair on the back of your neck when
sure.
you can actually sense somebody, the light bulb goes on, it's like, oh my God.
Well, it creates what I consider, there's a difference between moving into a moment of grace versus moving into a moment of manic. You know, manic is a ritualized state that sometimes you can get through, you know, religious worship and you know, the crescendo of the music and the minister and what have you, and you go into this hallelujah, and I'm there, yes, I praise him, yes. That's a manic state. This creates what I call grace, which is a state of certainty. And it's almost indefinable. You can't put words to it. It is a moment of It's a moment of clarity and certainty that collapses time, space. It collapses cause and effect. And you're present in the moment. You know exactly who you are, and you know exactly what you have to do.
Yeah, one of the great things about we do some training. We do ongoing training, and we actually teach people to actually use this profile with their clients and resell the profile. And one of the things that we focus on is that the more you're able to pay attention to yourself intrinsically, mm-hmm. which there's a huge cultural epidemic in our world, and it's commonly known as low self-esteem,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but that's a misnomer,
mm-hmm.
because there is no such thing as low self-esteem. Your esteem, who you are intrinsically as a being, is never low or high. Your spirit is never low or high.
That's correct.
Your consciousness is never low or high,
That's
so to
correct.
Speak.
That's correct.
All right? We make a distinction, a very important distinction. We call it the ABCs of valuing.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, the ABCs of valuation, of valuing, are as important to learn as the ABCs of language. And yet nobody teaches this anywhere, any place.
Mm-hmm.
And the A stands for attention. The B stands for balance, and the C stands for clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're able to measure using the value profile and the science of axiology is your attention, balance, and clarity in these three dimensions of intrinsic, extrinsic, and systemic
mm-hmm.
value.
Mm-hmm.
And when you really break it down, if you want to bottom line it, that's essentially what the value profile does,
mm-hmm.
is it gives you an instant picture of what do you pay attention to and
mm-hmm.
what do you not pay attention to,
mm-hmm.
or where do you pay so much attention that you miss other things that are important, how much balance do you have, so if you feel like you're out of balance in your life but you can't put your thumb or finger on it,
mm-hmm.
we can help you to identify where you're out of balance relative to these three dimensions.
Absolutely amazing.
And then most important is clarity.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And clarity is the measure of how much of what you look at do you see?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a huge distinction because when you don't have clarity, and I've had parts of my life over the past 15 years since I've been doing this where I have had very restricted clarity. It's kind of like you have 20/100 vision, and unless you get those corrective lenses on or your contact lenses or your glasses, you can stare at something all day long and not see it any more clearly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this actually speaks to another one of what I consider to be the success BS mantras,
uh-huh.
which is if you set a goal, don't take your eyes off the goal, keep your head riveted, don't look to the left, don't look to the right,
right.
You know, be single-minded about the goal,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
all right? The problem is you could be looking at a goal, but if you don't have clarity that that goal actually has meaning for you,
mm-hmm.
not only will you not achieve it, but you will continue to stumble and bump into things along the way. So not only are you on the on a mistaken path because that particular goal doesn't have meaning for you. It may have meaning for somebody who told you it was important, but it may not have any meaning for you.
This is so great.
And then secondly, you start banging into things along the way because you don't have the clarity to see that this doesn't have meaning for you, in which case you want to abandon that goal and set a different goal.
Well, you know, one of the things I tell people in my work with shock philosophy, and that is, you hear this term visualize all the time, and you have to have, you know, a clear vision of what it is that you want. But really, it's about having the clarity of what it is that you want, because whatever you cannot see, whatever you are not clear about will become that obstacle that you face as you're moving toward that intention.
That is a brilliant observation.
Thank you.
That is truly a brilliant distinction. I hope everybody got that, because you really summed up the difference between vision and clarity.
Yeah.
And so when you see the world or you see yourself with great clarity,
mm-hmm.
any vision that you hold for yourself is possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when your clarity is restricted, almost any vision that you might want to hold for yourself is almost impossible to attain. And even more important than that is you don't have the clarity to know, does it really matter? Because we're so inundated with external messages about what we ought to do or what we should do or where we should go or
mm-hmm.
how much we should have.
We're shooting all over ourselves.
We're shooting all over ourselves. Yes, we are. Every single minute of every single day.
Well, what I want to do, I have three agendas here that I want to get to, and we're at that 90-minute mark, but we have a lot more content to go, ladies and gentlemen, on this process here. But there are three things that I want to do. One, I want to ask you some more questions about, of course, axiology. Two, I want to open up the lines of communication here so that we can have a question and comment segment. And also, I want to send people to the website of where they can sign up for their own value profile. And so if you will, everyone, if you have pen and paper, write down this web address, and that is www.myshockvalue.com, myshock, S-H-O-C-K, value.com. And you can go there, read the information, and you can actually sign up and get your own value profile. And so, Mitch, would you, before we open up the lines for question and comment, can you give the listeners and the students, what will they get when they go to this webpage, and how does this process work, and what are some of the bonuses that they'll be receiving? Of course, one is just to have some time with you. But what will they get when they go and download their value profile?
Well, the way that we've structured this is we're going to do essentially a three-hour group conversation,
mm-hmm.
and essentially that's going to be intensive focus on you and everybody in the group as to their individual profile, what it means, how to use it, and how to turn those 3 hours into a whole different future.
Mm-hmm.
So that three-hour group conversation is typically a $99 training. We're going to buy you a $150 personal performance profile. That's the same profile that you see at thenewgame.com/personalperformance.pdf. That's a $150 profile. If you join us for this group training, we're going to buy that for you. In addition to that, we're going to give you a $49 gift course called 10 Ways to Make Good Decisions Without Stressing Out. This is a course that I wrote quite a few years ago, and it's a phenomenal way for you to begin to make good choices and good decisions and lower your stress, and that affects every aspect of your life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The second gift you're going to get is a transcript of a conversation actually from quite a few years ago, but it's as fresh today as it was back then, and it's how to use axiology to boost your income $50,000 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about 7 ways that you can leverage your time, your talents, your contacts, your communication, and other ways that you can leverage yourself using axiology. All right? Now, all of this comes with an unconditional money-back guarantee.
Wow.
And essentially, if you feel you didn't get far more value than you invested, the 3 hours alone will be more than enough to change your life. And so we're charging $149 investment. And if you go to that page, myshockvalue.com, all of this is spelled out in detail, and you can order right on that link, and then we'll have your profile. You can do your profile online. It takes about 15 minutes to complete. The report that you're going to get back is the personal performance, which measures your focus, your fire, your faith, and your fear, and 21 high-performance capacities. And then we'll schedule a time where we can all get together and brainstorm, or as I like to say, game storm, your value profile, and give you as much personal and group attention as possible. And at the end of it, if you don't feel like you got far more value than you invested, we'll be more than happy to return your investment.
Isn't that amazing? So basically what we're saying, ladies and gentlemen, is that you have absolutely nothing to lose. And here's the thing, and this also definitely goes into people's values. If you do not value yourself and you are truly calling yourself a spiritual seeker, which is what SHOCK stands for, seeking higher omnipotent conscious knowledge, if you're truly serious about going to that next level, whatever that looks like, whatever that means, either spiritually or in your personal world, take the chance, take the risk of finding out who you are so that you won't keep looping. You won't keep repeating the same reality over and over again. You won't keep attracting the same experiences, relationships that keep popping up and stifling you. And, you know, here's the other thing, Mitch, that I realized about this particular science. One of the questions that I have received throughout the years is not even, I'm not on track with my purpose. People will come up and say, I have no idea what my purpose is. And that's because they don't have clarity.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So yeah. So here is something that I can now say I can answer that question without being philosophical and say, okay, you don't know your purpose because you don't have clarity. But you do have a purpose. You just can't see it because it's clouded by all of this other stuff that's in the should category.
Yeah. It's a really good point. And for so many of us searching for, you know, meaning, that's really what Viktor Frankl's work was all about.
Yes.
When he wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning.
That's right.
He said, how do you find meaning in the midst of essentially chaos?
That's right.
And that's why he and Dr. Hartman were actually going to set up an institute in the United States for logotherapy, which was Dr. Frankl's approach to finding meaning and purpose, and axiology, which was the values hierarchy, essentially, of how do you measure meaning from a value perspective. And unfortunately, Dr. Hartman passed away, but we're here to continue that work, and I consider it kind of part of my mission and purpose is to share axiology with as many people on the planet as I possibly can.
I'm so blessed to be able to recognize what I call spiritual masters. I remember years and years ago I had an interview with in that interview that he told me, he says, you know, always be able to recognize, develop the skill to recognize greatness in others. And by doing so, that was one of my catalysts for being able to find what I consider the most brilliant minds in the world in spiritual evolution and actualization. So I do put you in that category, Mitch, even though if you don't want to have it, that's fine. But I do put you in that category because I'm very discriminating about who I interview, who I have associated with my name and with what the SHOCK Institute is about. And so I'm just blessed and honored that our paths crossed, you know, in such a crazy way, but we were able to recognize one another.
Well, I appreciate that, and I will tell you that in the 15 years that I've been doing this work, being a student of it has been so rewarding, and being a teacher of it is really being a student, and I encourage, and that's why I kind of use the CEO as chief encouragement officer, because I really do encourage people to teach what they know, even as little as they know, because when you teach it, you become it.
Mm-hmm.
And
isn't
so
that the truth?
If you really want to master something, don't just be a book student of it. Go out there and be awkward and clumsy.
Yes.
All right? Nobody
yes.
ever died from awkward and clumsy.
No, they did not.
Well, unless you're on a 50-story building or something.
Well, yeah.
again, that really speaks to the whole issue of perfection.
Sure.
Is that we're sometimes so So held back by perfection, you know, I don't quite know enough yet, or I'm not smart enough yet, or I'm not good enough yet, mm-hmm. or I'm not this, or I'm not that. I feel like the whole self-help industry was built on the premise of you're not enough yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to reverse that by saying, wait a minute, that's a mistaken message. The message is you are already more than enough, and in the process of wanting to become more, that's wonderful. But recognize your own intrinsic value. Recognize your own talent. Go inside and see what's there.
Absolutely.
And you might just be totally shocked by what's there.
You know, we're going to open up
the
line.
Let's take some questions.
Yeah, let's take some questions and comments here. So if you have a question or a comment for Mitch Axelrod, this brilliant mind, this Einstein mind of our time, please press 6 to unmute your lines and come out on the call. And pose your question or comment.
You may have to open up the line, Philippe.
You know what? I might have to. Hold on a moment, Mitch. Let me do that. It'll make it easier for everyone else. Hold on.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Okay, I am completely unmuted, so we can take questions and comments at will. So when you come on, give your name and where you're calling in from.
Hello
out there. Yes.
Hi, this is Oscar from Chicago.
Hey, Oscar.
Hey, Mitch, thank you so much for sharing this information. It's really great. I'm getting old. My mind is just going crazy right now. But you said you had mentioned that systemic value is basically a value of the mind, and the intrinsic value is the more of a moral value. And I forgot what you said what extrinsic value is.
That's more of the material value.
Okay. All right.
So systemic is the mind or the thinking dimension, and that's all the abstract ideas. The extrinsic is the material. That's all the real world stuff, the measurable stuff, the concrete stuff. And then the intrinsic value is the moral being spiritual, if you will. And the context of good and moral is that a good human being is a human being who essentially sees that he has intrinsic value.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, does that help with the distinction?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for that question, Oscar. Questions and comments for Mitch Axelrod tonight.
This is Tom, St. John. I'm in El Paso.
Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
What's your question and comment?
Briefly. I was really impressed with it all, and I can kind of relate to it all because I have followed a program of getting to know my inner self, like self-realization,
mm-hmm.
for example. And what I think that question here would be, would you recommend someone going to to understand oneself, going to a program like Ramtha or Self-Realization Fellowship in addition to doing this work?
Good question, Tom.
Yeah, it's a really good question. My feeling is that I see axiology as kind of a foundational piece that you can add to almost any other area of study or discipline or spiritual seeking or on the path, however, whatever it is. The way I see it is not an either or.
Mm-hmm.
Either or is that, again, that systemic dimension. You know, I should do this or should I do this? I look at it as kind of both and. And as long as you come from the place of what is the meaning that I want out of this, it's going to have value for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to do all kinds of courses, and I spent all kinds of money on things that I actually never pursued. Mm-hmm. And then one day I woke up and I said, before I spend my money on something, let me ask myself, what is the value that I want from this, and what means my life? Because, you know, the way things are today, marketing has gotten so sophisticated that it's very easy to find yourself spending most of your life kind of in training in one way or another, you know? And I could be seduced as much as the next guy because I'm a kind of a systemic guy at times in terms of my own self, and so I'm always seeking something different and new, and I'm an adventurer. Yet there are times where you have to step back and say, okay, what is the value that I'm seeking from this experience or this investment, or is this just something I want to do and I don't necessarily care to seek any meaning, which is perfectly fine. So I don't see it as an either-or. I feel part of when people experience axiology, it's kind of like going for your annual checkup. And for some of us, we do it every 6 months. I'll do a profile whenever I feel like I want to because I want to get as much input as I can. So I don't see it as either or. So if you're pursuing something else, great. This is something that you can always have because it's kind of like that yearly checkup. You know, whatever else you're going to do during the year, you want to make sure that you get a sense of where you're at. So, you know, it's really a personal decision, and I don't know enough about the specific ones that you mentioned and your situation to be able to make that connection. But I'm a believer that axiology is something for everybody. Now, not everybody will do it. I recognize that. But it offers something for everybody, even the high performer. Even the person who is super successful, there's something here that can help them find and fulfill more of their potential.
You just said something, Mitch, that caused me to have a question. Can kids take this as well?
You know, that's a great question. We're working on a profile for, like, under 15-year-olds.
Okay.
And I would say as long as the person is mature enough to understand the language on the profile, like one of the distinctions we make is burn a heretic at the stake.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's on the first profile.
I remember
now,
that.
Now, is that a positive thing or a negative thing? Well, if you understand it, then you can rank it. But if you don't have a working understanding of what a heretic might be, then that person might have a hard time. Although we usually see somewhere around 14 or 15 years old and above, and some for 13-year-olds, we're able to get them to do the profile. And we have some wonderful profiles for teenagers. That's one of the reasons I got into this work, was because I was very interested in bringing axiology to the educational system, to teenagers and high school students and college students. So I would say 15 and above, you're pretty safe. Below 15, you might need to have some interpretation on some of the statements.
Okay. You know, I just thought about this. This would be just absolutely phenomenal for kids going into college. What time in their life that this would...
Absolutely.
Oh, my God. If I had this when I was... Whew, amazing.
Yeah, my son is graduating high school this year, and he's going to be doing a profile very soon. And I waited until, you know, he was 17, and he's actually working part-time now. And so the second part of the profile, which deals with words like, I like my work, it does me good, he'll have a way to understand what those terms mean. And so, yeah, I believe that this, not only is it good for teenagers, but it's great for parents. We're really going to be putting a push on to get parents and teenagers or kids to do it together. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the big distinction in these three dimensions can be summed up in three words. At the systemic level, we spend most of our time obeying. We obey the rules. We obey the policies. We obey the religious dogma. At the extrinsic level, we spend our time serving. We serve others in order to get paid. We serve others in order to be recognized. We serve others in order to be socially included. At the intrinsic level is the dimension of loving. And when you're operating at the intrinsic level of life, you're loving people for who they are, not for who they're not. You're loving yourself for who you are, not for who you're not. This is not a woo-woo, concept. This is an actual way of living your life. And you know what's amazing about those three distinctions? If you took those three distinctions and applied it to the world of business, which we're all in one way, shape, or form, you can tell the ethos, the culture of any organization instantly by the way they communicate with you, whether they're systemic, if they obey their policies and procedures, and they don't care to serve you because their job is to enforce their policies, their rules and procedures, and you know how frustrating that can be.
Mm-hmm.
If they're serving you, in which case they're out to help you accomplish what you want to do and get and have, which is a much higher level, and you know the difference because you know when you're being served as opposed to when the person you're trying to get served from is obeying their rules and frustrating you to no end. And then when you meet a company or an individual who loves you, and I use that word metaphorically, but they work with you with compassion. They treat you as an individual. They don't look at you as just a customer. They look at you as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And they treat you that way, like Philippe does with his Shock Institute. He treats people as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see the culture of a company with these distinctions in a different way than you've ever seen before. And if you're a company, if you run a company, if you own a company, you work for a company, you can alter the consciousness, the culture, and the ethos of the company simply by up-leveling the way in which you interrelate with people. And whenever you're given a choice between obeying your policies and procedures and serving a customer, you serve the customer because it's a higher value decision. Now, if you can actually get to the point where you love your customer, where you actually have compassion and empathy for that person, not just to make a sale, but you care about that person as a human being, you will never want for business
mm-hmm.
because there's so few organizations today that demonstrate that kind of value that when you meet somebody, you want to stay with them for the rest of your life.
I can also imagine that by going through these profiles or taking the value profile, and especially the various different types of profiles that are available, that one can move themselves from one pay scale radically to another seemingly overnight. Their value will go up in the marketplace tremendously.
Mitch?
Yes?
I just have a question for you. This is Rona Harvey.
Hi, Rona.
Hi.
Where are you calling in from, Rona?
I'm calling in from near Seattle, actually from Yelm.
Okay, welcome.
Thank you. So you made a point about clarity. How much of what we look at do we really see?
Mm-hmm.
And the distraction there are obviously the voices and the chemistry that run in the body that are very cunning and very elusive no matter how you look at them. They're a foray of distractions that can keep us from being present, really. When you said feel the fear and do it anyway, I agree with you. There is something that does hold me back. In your follow through from this particular program this evening, first of all, do you understand what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely.
And secondly, in your experience of applying this process, are you familiar and are you aware that you can actually eliminate those distractions?
You know, this is such a big area, this whole fear thing, that why we actually didn't use the word cure, I think we changed that, didn't we, Philippe?
Yeah, we did. Good question, okay. Joan, to bring
this up. Because originally we were going to talk about cure, and I got a little nervous
mm-hmm.
with that word because we were kind of stepping into medical terminology, all right? And because fear is such a big thing that I don't want to give people false expectations either, because we already have way more than we need in terms of false expectations. But here's
well, in my case, fear is systemic.
Okay. If your fear is systemic,
mm-hmm.
then we can isolate it.
Mm-hmm.
We can identify it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
We can pinpoint it. I can tell you how you're thinking. I don't know what you're thinking.
Right.
All right. If I could tell you that, I'd be doing this from the island of Bimini somewhere.
Right. Right.
So I can't
now,
exactly
I already know how I think. I've watched it, and I've seen it, and I've actually documented it.
Okay. So if we were to look at your profile,
right,
we could engage in a conversation which could get down to which of those five different characteristics of fear or combinations of those might be most impacting you, in which case once we kind of isolate it and identify it,
mm-hmm,
then we have a much better chance at developing a strategy to obliterate it. And there is no magic wand, one-size-fits-all strategy.
No, I appreciate that. But
I hear people say, well, I can get rid of anybody's fear in 15 minutes. Well, maybe you can, and maybe if you're into hypnosis, that works. I don't practice that.
No, but even at this point, to eliminate any of the distractions, or some of them, to where inertia is no longer the option, to where you can actually move, I agree with you. Just taking a dart and throwing it at the map at this point is probably a wise idea, just in order to move in any way or direction.
Yes, sometimes moving any which way is better than not moving at all.
Mm-hmm.
However, it could also be, because we're able to not only measure your clarity, we're also able to measure your attention and your balance.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that your source of fear, frustration, distraction is coming from a glitch in your attention or your balance. Most of the time, it comes from clarity or a lack of clarity.
Right.
But sometimes we're so riveted with our attention on something that we can't see anything to the right or left, so we have no peripheral vision. And so if I can shift your attention a little bit, sometimes that can alter the whole landscape of things.
Mm-hmm.
Attention-based, balance-based,
or
clarity-based,
right,
or some combination of all
of three. Okay, got
and
it.
Once we see that, it's like you go to the doctor, you say, you know, I'm not feeling so good. Well, let's isolate it, let's look, let's do some tests. Hey, guess what? You mm-hmm have an ulcer, you know? And in the past, you know what they did for ulcers? They gave you pills. Until one brilliant scientist one day discovered an ulcer is really either a virus or a bacteria. I'm not sure which it is. And now they can take care of that with an antibiotic. So I guess it's a bacteria, right? Or is it a virus? I don't know.
Well, it could
be
either or. It depends on the severity of it.
But the point is, for all those years, my mom was on ulcer medication for 25 years, and she didn't even need it. They took her off it. They got rid of her ulcer. It was gone. Boom. So what happened? A whole new therapeutic model came along that said, no, it's not this, it's that. That's what I see the profile being, is it's a whole new therapeutic model that says, where's your attention, where's your balance, where's your clarity, where's your combination? Boom, now let's take a look at that, and let's see if we can't isolate, identify, and obliterate that fear.
Okay, so I then go on to this web
URL
that you actually referenced us to, and then sign up, and then I get instructions from there on in?
Your instructions will come automatically. You'll do the profile online. Within an hour or two, you'll get it back because it has to be processed and filtered through through our system, and then we send you a PDF file, and just you open it and go through it, and then we discuss it all on the group call. You can go for personal. If you wanted to do one-on-one coaching, we do offer that as well.
Okay.
That's another option that we could discuss privately.
Okay.
Discuss that with Philippe.
And the option for doing that will be on that email, follow-through email?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Chris.
The option for the personal coaching?
Yes.
No, actually, that would be something you would have to request.
I request it through Philippe?
You could request it through Philippe.
Sure, and I'll get that information, and then I'll get that to Mitch, and then you guys work out the details so that it's one-on-one. I have to admit, I love the group coaching. But I really recommend the one-on-one because, again, you know, it just shortens the learning curve. It diminishes the barrier to entry into the intention that you wish to manifest in your life.
Right.
But it is also, you know, a cost issue. So it depends upon the individual and where they're at consciously in the world, whether or not they should go with the group or whether or not they should go with the one-on-one. But either
one. Is the group coaching included in the $149?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, it is.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your evening and your time.
Thank you very much for your questions and comments.
It.
Do we have any other questions and comments before we move on and begin to close out this lesson plan?
Yeah, here's the question. Yes, Mitch?
Yes.
Who is this calling in?
Maria Luisa from Mexico.
Welcome. What's your question?
Okay. I understand that I like it very, very much. Congratulations. I feel like the three systemic, intrinsic, and extrinsic, like the highest, the harmony, is the alignment. It's like to knowing myself, like to glue it, to empower them together.
Yes.
And then continue. But I was thinking, if I make it often, wouldn't I be too conscious of separation instead of empowering the togetherness?
You know, that's a really good observation.
It
and
really is.
You can. We can, because our tendency, because we tend to be more systemic in many ways, and because of that, we tend to isolate things, so we tend to separate things. But what will happen, though, as you become more aware consciously, you will find your balance. You will find that combination, and you used a very, very good word, alignment. It's a very powerful word, because that's really what we're seeking, is we're seeking greater alignment from an inside-out perspective. So, yes, could you wind up being more separate than together? That's possible. My experience, though, over 15 years of working with this personally and with literally thousands of people, is that for the vast majority of people, it works the other way, because they're much more conscious of the distinctions. They're able to make choices that, for example, if you have to go to work and work late one day, but you promised your child that you're going to go to their rehearsal or their recital, that's a value conflict, potentially. You have to make one choice which may affect a value decision in another area. Mm-hmm. Well, being able to see the distinction and then decide what has more meaning for you, you can then make that choice and then live with that choice much more comfortably than feeling as though you're choosing by default, like, I have to, I have no choice, I've got to, I must. All of that is systemic value. And when you begin to say, I choose, that is the big breakthrough. So it's possible, just like anything's possible. You know, people go to doctors, and 30-40% of them don't even follow the doctor's prescription.
Yes,
so there's no guarantee that you won't fall into that, but your chances of being more of an integrated, aligned person are far greater when you know than when you don't know.
Yes, I feel like there is a break point. I mean, to start it, I feel it wonderful. It's like to get in a car to be aligned. But after that, after I see the results and feel and everything, I feel like it may be like a break point, like, I don't know, maybe on the amount of time on doing it again and becoming more conscious of separation instead of reinforcing that togetherness.
Well, what we would do is we would encourage you to not focus on the separation,
yeah,
but to begin to up-level your thinking and your valuing to the higher dimension. So if you value intrinsically and you value extrinsically more and more and more, you will spend less and less time in that either-or separate dimension of systemic value.
Yeah.
And so it's like anything else, you know. There's no magic wand. We're not going to give you a pill that's going to make you better. It's the first step on a journey, and it's a tool. And it's a tool to help you get there quicker, easier, with less resistance. But, yes, it's like anything else. You know, once you start to work out, you want to keep doing it once or twice a week to maintain your consistency. If you go on some sort of a health shift in your diet or your food, you want to maintain that healthy lifestyle. So it's very easy to fall back into old thinking. The difference is, though, you have something here that will always keep you present to the distinctions of intrinsic.
But the doubt that I have is because in what I think is what I get. I mean, if I'm very conscious about separation of these three dimensions, wouldn't I get more separation? I mean, I think like there's a break point, less or more. I mean, an exact point.
Let me summarize this, because you're saying the same thing again. Let me just say this. I presented these three dimensions separately so that you could understand the distinction among them.
Yeah.
But they're not separate dimensions in a way. Your whole life is integrated.